So which comes first? We want to leave you with this thought at the end of the hour. A healthy lifestyle or a purposeful life? Having a purpose. Boy, my kids, I think, had a real purpose in doing that April Fool's joke, decorating my chair with goofy stuff. I could feel the purpose in their hands as I was pulling all of the stuff off earlier today. But does purpose proceed from living in healthy ways, doing healthy things, or is it health that comes from having that purpose in life, a mental outlook that feels meaningful, spiritually fulfilling? But maybe this is just one of those environment versus genetics, chicken and egg, unresolvable paradoxes that ends up keeping us from really understanding what's the basis for achieving a healthy life. Vic Strecker joins us now. He's Director for Innovation and Social Entrepreneurship at the University of Michigan School of Public Health. Vic, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, John.
And let's just say, as far as purpose is concerned, the University of Michigan Wolverines in the Final Four, there's a sense of purpose, eh?
Boy, they sure seemed like a team playing with a purpose. Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Makes everybody feel better there in Ann Arbor, I suspect, today.
It does, yeah. Thanks.
So as far as health and purpose is concerned, how do you isolate the sense of healthy lifestyle and healthy behaviors from this other notion of living your life purposefully?
Well, first of all, there are studies that have actually experimentally randomized people into starting to think more about their purpose in life, about their core values that they have in life. And as they start writing down those core values and what's very meaningful to them, then they're compared against another group who just wrote down things like the current events of the day. And then both groups are exposed. For example, if they're smokers, they're both exposed to some anti-smoking messages. And what they find is that if you have been writing down core values and thinking more about the meaning of your life, you are far less defensive about these anti-smoking messages or messages to lose weight or manage your stress or work out more, things like that. And so that really, those studies really sparked something in me. And I thought, boy, I really should pursue this more.
And of course, the idea that it makes good sense to live a purposeful life, that's been around for, you know, thousands of years. I mean, it's the basis of philosophy. But the idea of it having a specific impact on health, this comes from observations in some pretty stressful environments.
That's right. Viktor Frankl, for example, was a psychotherapist in Vienna, and he was brought into three different concentration camps. And as a prisoner in these concentration camps, he observed literally 19 out of the 20 people he knew around him die. I mean, those were the statistics of survival. He thought himself that he was going to die. And what he observed was that people started losing their purpose in life, indeed, then started losing their health, and then they died, almost invariably. So he started a whole new therapy called logotherapy or meaning therapy. And in a way, that's something that I think could be revived, and especially in this society as we become more and more nihilistic, as we're losing our meaning and purpose in our lives more and more in this society.
In your own life, I think you struggled with some of these issues, and the whole idea of Dr. Frankl had suddenly a great deal of relevance for you.
Yeah. Well, we had a daughter, Julia, who, when she was one, came down with a chickenpox virus. She was born healthy, but she caught this chickenpox virus. And just every once in a while, this chickenpox virus attacks a person's heart. And that's what happened to Julia. We were in the Netherlands. I was on sabbatical, a research leave. And we were told that she only had 30 days to live and that there's absolutely no help for her, that her heart was ruined. And when we came back to the States, they said, she likely will pass away, but her only hope is a heart transplant, if you would like to do that. And she became one of the early children to get a heart transplant in 1990. And so we lived her life very differently, actually. We started, and actually I discovered how to live a life as a result of Julia, because in thinking she has a finite amount of time on this earth. And then I thought, well, so do I, and so does my wife, and so does our other daughter. And so we started trying to act as if we had a very finite amount of time on this earth. And when we did, we found that we were living in Technicolor, that suddenly we were living more fully. I guess we watched less television. We spent a lot more time actually doing important things and making important plans. And when she passed away 2 years ago at the age of 19, I kind of lost my own purpose. And in fact, I remember my wife soon after her death, Julia's death, said, you know, I've lost my job. And her job really was to take care of Julia. And, you know, Julia was in nursing school at the University of Michigan. She led such a full life. She'd been around the globe a couple of times. She had a great boyfriend, great friends. And I just thought, boy, she really did live a life with purpose. But now we've lost our purpose. And it took me a while to even discover that that was the problem that I was facing. Of course, grief is overwhelming, but at the same time, this loss of purpose started moving me in this direction of trying to figure out what is it about purpose? And that's when I discovered this whole body of literature and started making connections with ancient philosophy all the way through very modern science, looking at chromosome repair and other things.
So the idea of living with purpose comes with therapeutic benefits, both in terms of your ability to change behaviors and your ability to repair damaged DNA?
We know that people with a high purpose in life are 2 times less likely to develop Alzheimer's disease 7 years later, if you're elderly, than people who have a low purpose in life. We know that people who have a purpose in life live longer. We know that people who have a purpose in life are less likely to get heart attacks if they start out with heart disease. And also, Elizabeth Blackburn, the 2009 Nobel laureate in medicine, found that actually she put people into a meditation group. And this is with a whole team of researchers at the University of California, San Francisco. And she put people into this meditation course. And then she had people in a waiting list. And that's a pretty good control group, because those people are similar. They're waiting to get into the same group. But it turns out that the people who were in the meditation program developed a greater purpose in life, and that greater purpose in life in turn repaired their chromosomes more, what are called telomeres, which are the ends of our chromosomes, very much like the plastic caps at the end of our shoelaces. These were more likely to be repaired if you had a purpose in life, and it was developed through meditation.
You know, what's amazing to me, thinking back on the story you told about your daughter, Julie, here's a lesson about health that comes from someone who couldn't possibly be healthy, your daughter.
She taught us so much, but her lesson to me was to live my life fully as if I might die tomorrow. Because you truly never know. And I know that sounds trite. I know it could be on a poster with a kitten hanging off of a fence or something. On the other hand, I think there's a real science developing around that philosophy and around that simple adage. Marcus Aurelius, who is one of our best Roman emperors, but also a Stoic philosopher, wrote in his Meditations that he would wake up every morning and assume he would die that day. And in assuming he would die, he would start living more strongly. In fact, he said, do not live life as if you're going to live 10,000 years. And so I think we're starting to live life as if we're not going to die. I think we have all sorts of mechanisms for avoiding the thoughts of death. And we fear death. And yet, if we start thinking we are going to die, we do have a finite amount of time on this earth, let's live it fully, you start enjoying life more, you become less depressed, you have better sex. There's stories, that there's research about this. You have less likelihood of Alzheimer's disease, heart disease, cancer. You're more likely to live longer. That's pretty impressive. So imagine if a pharmaceutical company had a drug that helped reduce Alzheimer's disease by 2.4 times. I mean, it would be in our water supply.
It would be a headline, that's for sure. You know, one of the interesting things here is I'm wondering if this is so scientifically powerful, partly because the way we live in the United States these days is very reactive, very disorganized, very just sort of taking everything as it comes. And this ability to step back only underscores how little we do it in this society.
Yeah, and I really believe we need some new mechanisms for doing this. In the past, we had very strong, consistent institutions of religion and family and community. And even as early as Friedrich Nietzsche, Emil Durkheim, one of our first sociologists, they talked a lot about the loss of meaning and loss of purpose and what that would do to our society. Nietzsche, of course, said we have to find our own purpose then. And that's what existentialist philosophers talked about around the turn of the century. It was focused on finding a purpose or meaning in life. And I think we've kind of forgotten that. We've lost that. And so, you know, if you want to do something really beneficial for your health, and we know, for example, we have a $2.8 trillion healthcare budget. We know that over two-thirds of that is related to chronic disease, and we know that over two-thirds of chronic disease is related to the decisions we make in our lives, about our lifestyles. So we need to do something about this. We need to do something that goes beyond what current traditional medicine is focused on, which is simply avoiding and, in fact, you know, really trying to not think about disease and death.
Well, the thing that I love about this is that we haven't embraced loss and meaninglessness in the United States. We've just misplaced our sense of purpose because we're so distracted all the time with our approach to capitalism and technology and just the way we organize our lives. We've misplaced purpose, which is possibly a sign we can get it back.
Absolutely. Materialism, I think, just simply has not given us this purpose that we're looking for. It does not make us happy in the happiness sense that Aristotle talked about. He talked about two levels of happiness. He said one happiness might be when you buy a new, you know, shirt or car or whatever, and you feel good and you feel giddier if you go to, you know, some amusement park. But then there's this happiness that relates to the ability and interest in a purpose in your life. And by the way, purposes change over time. This is not some Vedantic Hindu, you know, esoteric purpose in your life. It could be if you're a custodian in an elementary school, you may say, my purpose in my life is to make that school clean and safe for the children in that elementary school. Now, I can imagine in that case that that custodian has lower absenteeism rates, much more productive, and is a much, much happier person. And those children will remember him in the long run. Now, imagine that kind of purpose.
And imagine being able to bottle that sense of purpose and well-being. Vic Strecker, thanks so much.
Thank you so much, John.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.